A man holds a .357 Magnum to his wife's head. Their 8-year-old son watches in terror from across the room. Outside, heavily armed tactical teams wait for the signal to breach. But before bullets fly, one voice cuts through the chaos, calm, measured, searching for connection. This is the world of crisis negotiation, where the right words can mean the difference between tragedy and salvation. For 3 decades, Gary Nosner stood at this razor's edge, pioneering techniques that transformed how law enforcement handles life or death situations. His methods didn't just save hostages, they revolutionized how we think about human communication under extreme pressure. What he discovered challenges everything we assume about power, control, and heroism. Sometimes the bravest thing you can do is simply listen. When Charlie pressed a revolver against Cheryl's temple in rural Virginia, Nosner faced a man drowning in desperation. Charlie had declared, "I'm not going to kill myself. You're going to have to kill me." Yet beneath the rage, Nosner heard someone grasping for a lifeline. When Charlie demanded a helicopter, Nosner became his advocate. "I'm working on that helicopter for you," buying time while coordinating tactical options. The breakthrough came through conversations about hunting, woodsmanship, and fatherhood. Nosner employed active listening, repeating concerns, acknowledging feelings without judgment, finding small agreements. After 11 hours, Charlie emerged using his family as shields. FBI snipers took their shot when a gap appeared, killing Charlie instantly but saving his wife and child. Months later, Cheryl wrote, "Your voice was so soothing. Charlie ended up liking you." This paradox, forming genuine connection with someone you may help neutralize, captures negotiation's profound complexity. Success isn't always perfect, but it means preserving life whenever possible.
Nosner's negotiation expertise emerged from 1980s international terrorism. The 1985 TWA Flight 847 hijacking, where Navy diver Robert Stethem was murdered, profoundly shaped his approach. He spent 5 years pursuing terrorist Mohammed Ali Hamadeh, witnessing terrorism's devastating human cost. During the Akhil Lauro investigation, Nosner interviewed hijacker Majed al-Mulki in Turin's maximum security prison. Facing al-Mulki's radiating hatred, he chose empathy over aggression, speaking Palestinian Arabic dialect, asking about family, gradually building trust. This approach secured al-Mulki's confession. The Egypt Air Flight 648 hijacking provided stark contrast. Without trained negotiators, Maltese authorities allowed Egyptian commandos to storm the plane with explosive and automatic weapons. 65 passengers died in crossfire, a tragedy proving one truth: skilled negotiation prevents unnecessary bloodshed. The relentless pace devastated Nosner's family life. After the 1988 Lockerbie bombing, he transferred to Quantico's Special Operations and Research Unit, revolutionizing FBI negotiation training. His transformative principle emerged: listening is the cheapest yet most effective concession we can make, proving empathy achieves what force cannot.
The 1991 Talladega prison uprising tested Nosner's philosophy when Cuban detainees seized 11 hostages. These Mariel Boatlift inmates initially refused to negotiate. Nosner deployed aromatic warfare, cooking bacon and coffee nearby to tempt communication. On day 7, a freed hostage warned that dangerous inmates were gaining influence. Nosner's team provided a feast without preconditions, lulling inmates into complacency while preparing assault. At 3:43 a.m. on day 10, tactical teams freed all hostages without firing a shot. Talladega represented ideal integration. Negotiations softened opposition and gained intelligence, enabling tactical success. Yet the Bureau undervalued negotiations' contribution. This imbalance had tragic consequences at Ruby Ridge in 1992, where HRT Commander Dick Rogers implemented rules permitting snipers to shoot all armed adult males without warning, rules later deemed unconstitutional. An HRT sniper wounded Randy Weaver and accidentally killed his wife Vicky, who was holding their baby. Ruby Ridge became a rallying cry for anti-government militias and helped motivate the Oklahoma City bombing. It also foreshadowed an even more catastrophic standoff, Waco.
The 1993 Waco standoff represents Nosner's most painful chapter, a tragedy that might have been avoided had negotiation prevailed over tactical impatience. After a disastrous ATF raid left 9 dead, the FBI took over, with Nosner leading negotiations. His trickle, flow, and gush strategy worked immediately. Within days, David Koresh released 12 children, and negotiators arranged calls so parents could verify their well-being. However, FBI SAC Jeff Jamar ordered Bradley armored vehicles onto the property, damaging credibility with Koresh's lieutenant Steve Schneider. HRT Commander Dick Rogers escalated with high-powered lights, combat vehicles, and bizarrely blasting Tibetan chants and Nancy Sinatra over loudspeakers. Despite these obstacles, negotiations succeeded. Between March 19 to 23, 9 more Davidians exited, bringing the total to 35 safely out. But after one particularly destructive tactical operation, Koresh angrily declared no one else will be coming out. When Nosner confronted Jamar about counterproductive tactics, he dismissed the concerns, fixated on forcing faster resolution due to mounting costs and public pressure. On March 25, after 4 exhausting weeks, Nosner was replaced. No further Davidians would exit. On April 19, when the FBI deployed tear gas, fires erupted throughout the compound, resulting in 75 deaths, confirmed as mass suicide. Waco became a self-inflicted wound, demonstrating the fatal consequences of undermining negotiation with aggressive tactics. The 1996 Montana Freeman standoff offered redemption after Waco. The Freemen were radical anti-government sovereigns who committed fraud, threatened officials, and once seized a city council meeting at gunpoint. Unlike Waco's frontal assault, Nosner implemented a measured approach. FBI agents wore casual clothes, not tactical gear, and allowed local ranchers through checkpoints to minimize the siege atmosphere. Montana legislator Carl Oz, a Republican rancher who knew one Freeman's father, proved invaluable as an intermediary. FBI Director Louis Free personally supported patience. "I am in no hurry to end this incident. I want to make sure that we take whatever time necessary to negotiate this out the right way." The breakthrough came when Edwin Clark, who owned the land, expressed concern for family inside needing medical attention. In an unprecedented move, the FBI flew Edwin to meet imprisoned Freeman leader Leroy Schreitzer, who blessed the surrender. On the 81st day, the longest siege in U.S. history, it ended peacefully, validating that patience and respect could achieve what force never could. Nosner's 30-year career culminated in the 2002 DC sniper case, where his team crafted media messages to communicate with the perpetrators. When the snipers demanded police announce "caught the sniper like a duck in a noose," Nosner recommended including this phrase publicly. Senior FBI officials blocked it, a decision that may have cost bus driver Conrad Johnson his life. After retiring in 2003, Nosner joined Control Risks, working on international kidnapping cases, including 3 American contractors captured by FARC terrorists in Colombia. His legacy transformed crisis management worldwide, with applications extending to business, diplomacy, and personal relationships. Nosner demonstrated that effective crisis management isn't about domination, but connection, that before influencing others, we must first understand them. In our culture that glorifies tactical solutions, his career reveals the most heroic act might be simply listening to someone in crisis. This principle remains his most enduring contribution. Listening is the cheapest concession we can make, and often the most powerful.